The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
My guest today is Thurza McSherry, who is Director of Marketing and Communications for the Wildlife Trusts. Thurza, welcome. Could we start with what the Wildlife Trusts do?
Yes, of course, and thank you for your welcome and for inviting me on. The Wildlife Trusts are one of the UK's leading conservation charities, and we are a collection of independently governed charities. So there are 47 charities in total, covering all of the UK. We work on land and at sea, and we work on practical conservation projects all over the UK. So bringing back habitats, restoring species, reintroducing species that have gone extinct, such as the beaver and pine marten, but also creating a really strong voice on bringing about the policies and legislation that we need to see in the UK to bring back our wildlife. So unfortunately, the UK is one of the most depleted places on earth in terms of wildlife and natural habitats. And it is our goal to really restore nature at scale so that it can play its full role once again in human health and well-being, but also tackling the climate crisis as well. Each wildlife trust is very rooted in its local community. They know the local landscape intimately and their local communities. And that has a really sort of powerful effect then when you come to call for changes in policy and law at a national level. So it's a very exciting place to work. We have around 870,000 members across the UK. We have around 40,000 volunteers. So we've got this real sort of practical volunteer base working to conserve nature. And we have around 3,000 staff collectively as well.
Okay, so I'm getting the impression that there's quite a lot of you. So there's so much in there that I want to talk about. So one of the things I want to talk about is your various stakeholders. But I think the first thing I want to come on with, because it's so unique to what you do, is the policies and the influencing legislation, because I think that's quite an area that lots of marketers don't do and don't know about. So how does that practically work?
With the Wildlife Trust, the central charity who I work for, we have a public affairs team who will work very closely with relevant government departments to look at the policies that we need to see brought about in order to bring about nature's recovery. But on the public facing side of that, my team, so I've got a team of expert PR managers, marketeers, communications professionals who work with the public in terms of getting the public engaged in calling for the changes that we need to see from government. And of course, we also make use of the national media as well. So what we've built, certainly over the last couple of years, is a really strong public voice in the national media that's intimately linked to our public affairs work. So, for example, when government makes an announcement on a certain topic, the position that we've created for ourselves is that national journalists will always turn to the Wildlife Trust to ask for our views on that particular government announcement. So it's a very strong position to be in.
Let me push a bit more on this, because again, it's an area that we don't always hear enough about, I think. So how do you get that engagement with national media?
Well, with the national media, what I would say is the relationships that we have been built over a long period of time, and they're built on trust. So we are very careful that things we take to the media are of, very, very high quality. And we make it as easy as possible. So, for example, if we're working with a journalist on a package around a particular issue that we would like to see covered. So, for example, towards the end of last year, we launched our 30 by 30 campaign. Now, what this is a call for 30% of our land and sea to be managed for nature's recovery in the UK by 2030. And it's widely accepted among the international community that 30% is, I suppose, if you like, the minimum that you would need to manage for nature in order for there to be any chance of turning around the nature and climate emergencies. So this was a really sort of strong public engagement campaign, but it was also a fundraising campaign as well. Now, it's traditionally very hard to get national media coverage for a fundraising campaign. But we absolutely achieved cut through across all of the main media outlets. And the reason that we're able to do that is because we'd worked for several months on a really compelling package illustrating nature's recovery and the 30 by 30 concept on the ground. So we had some really beautiful, photogenic, inspiring stories of where landscapes are in recovery owing to Wildlife Trust efforts, and really sort of painting a picture of what this could look like, you know, if everyone came together and worked to make this a reality. So what that has meant is that being able to provide a whole package around the stories that we want to promote, so in this case 30 by 30, made journalists' lives a lot easier. You know, we'd provided expert spokespeople, people who were really able to bring those stories to life, take camera crews into those places to really show the impact of what we were trying to achieve. It did help, I will say, that at the time in September, the government, sort of knowing that we were going to be going out with our 30 by 30 campaign on the same day, came out with their pledge to sign up to 30 by 30. So we were kind of in the thick of it already with the media. We'd been working in the weeks coming up to that. So that when, you know, this surprise announcement came out on the same day, we were the people that the media turned to. So it's all about kind of having your finger on the pulse, knowing what the political issues are going to be. And this is where, you know, I was talking about earlier, our sort of really close working with our public affairs and policy teams comes into play. So marketeers need to know what's going on in the public affairs space when you work for certainly an environmental charity, but I would say any NGO, non-governmental organisation. You really need to have a handle as a marketeer on what's going on in the public affairs space.
And how do you do that? Are you horizon scanning? Do you have a team that does that, and you as the marketer just go and talk to them? I mean, how practically does that
work?
Yeah,
exactly. You've kind of hit that in one go, actually. So, yeah, we have a weekly meeting with our public affairs colleagues. So these are the people who will be talking to government departments, special advisors to the government, and so on, and really sort of understanding sort of what's going on, you know, in terms of government thinking on certain issues. But they're not just sort of, you know, tapping into what's going on, they're also influencing that as well. So our public affairs people work you know, very closely with government departments to say, these are the changes that we're calling for, these are what this is what needs to happen, and really making the case based on the evidence that we have from the Wildlife Trust. So I mentioned earlier that Wildlife Trusts are working on the ground with communities. They are seeing what's happening. They know what works in practice. And that is a really powerful tool when you're talking to government, to be able to show what's effective in terms of restoring nature and the benefits that that brings.
So I appreciate I'm possibly pushing you into slightly more into public affairs, but one of the things that always fascinates me is, how do you get that government ear? So do you literally pick up the phone to a special advisor and go, can we come and talk to you about this? Or are there regular forums? It's an area I think most of us don't understand.
It's a mixture of things. It's both of those things. But what I would say, it's the kind of long-term relationships based on trust and really sort of we have some really credible authorities in their field within the Wildlife Trust. So, for example, something we call nature-based solutions, so how restoring nature can tackle the climate emergency, for example. Peatlands being a really wonderful example of that. We have some real policy experts, so sort of thinking very deeply about the types of policy and the impact of those that we need to see, for example, agricultural policy. Obviously, you know, over 70% of our land is managed for agriculture, food and farming. So it's clearly going to have an impact on nature's recovery in terms of the way we manage land for agriculture. So, you know, we have people who are real experts in agriculture and agricultural land management, for example. And over the years, developing that expertise and being the really sort of trusted voice, the authority, means that very often we will be asked for our views on things, you know, on a sort of sort of case by case basis. But also, you're right, there are regular forums that environmental charities such as ourselves attend, and we are part of a number of coalitions as well. So we have that liaison both directly but also through the coalitions that we are part of. So it's all a very fascinating world. And certainly one that is fairly a sort of a fairly recent one for me as well, having worked for 10 years in marketing and fundraising in higher education previously. So joining an environmental charity around 3 years ago was quite an eye-opener for me too. And this I was absolutely the same as you, absolutely fascinated by the public affairs work and also the interplay between my team of marketeers and the impact that they can have and the facilitation for that public affairs work that expert communicators can achieve.
Yes, let's talk a little bit more about the marketing. I do want to come back to how you got into this area, because again, I know it's an area that our listeners are very interested in. Tell me more about that interplay, because I remember often I think you need a groundswell of opinion to prove to politicians that changes need to be made, but you also need to explain to the public why these changes are important. So how does your marketing campaigns work alongside the public affairs?
Well, we have a number of campaigns. Our longest running one is something called 30 Days Wild, and that's happening now. Mm-hmm. And it's where we ask members of the public to do something wild, something we call a random act of wildness, every day during the month of June. And we engage around 700,000 people every year in 30 Days Wild, and that's growing. It grew phenomenally last year, and we've seen another jump in that this year as well. And that's people all over the UK taking part in 30 Days Wild, and it was really conceived of as a public engagement campaign to get people just taking a moment to consider the beauty of nature and also the impact on their own health. We did a study with the University of Derby, which demonstrated that people's health and well-being was very positively impacted by taking part in 30 Days Wild, and just noticing nature and taking time in your day to do that actually had a long-term effect on people's well-being as well. And there are numerous studies around the impact of nature on well-being, and it's something that we feel really passionate about at the Wildlife Trust, and we very firmly believe that everybody should have that access to nature wherever they are. And so that's 30 Days Wild. But we also run a number of short-term campaigns dedicated to raising awareness and building support for the changes that we need to see, particularly in our policy landscape. So, for example, we've run campaigns around changes to planning law, Obviously, planning regulations really sort of impacting on nature's recovery, or even, you know, the basic sort of protection of nature in the face of development. We've run campaigns around major infrastructure projects, such as HS2, for example, where our reporting has shown that there are around 100 sites of ancient woodland and special sites for wildlife going to be impacted by the route, and really calling on the public to help us get the changes that we need to see around the HS2 planning. That was one of our sort of biggest campaigns. Actually, we had around 200,000 people really sort of getting their voices heard through that. We've also run campaigns for greater protection around our seas, particularly in respect of, and listeners may have seen government announcement last week on the designation of the first new highly protected marine areas, which will massively reduce the impact of infrastructure and fishing in those areas and allow our hugely depleted marine life to recover in those protected areas. That has been a very long-term campaign by the Wildlife Trust to see those highly protected marine areas in place. So it was a really momentous occasion for us last week when the government finally made an announcement on the first of those.
So one of the questions I wanted to ask was how you measure success of your campaigns. I mean, clearly something like that, highly protected marine area, the government makes an announcement. I imagine you would, in normal circumstances, throw a wild party because you'd feel that, you know, you massively achieved. But that, as you said, was a long-term campaign. So I suppose there's two parts of the question. One is, how do you keep the momentum going in such a long period of time? And also, how do you measure the success of your campaigns?
Well, you're right. I mean, when you see the sort of changes finally implemented, and you know, that is a huge cause for celebration. That is the ultimate. But beyond that, when you start to see in those areas through monitoring, you know, and research, the wildlife actually recovering, that's, you know, the sort of big goal really. Mm-hmm. But taking it back a few steps, the sorts of things that we look at are the number of people engaging with our campaigns. So we look very carefully at engagements on our social media, for example. We use social listening tools to monitor what people are saying about particular issues. We look at, you know, all your sort of normal things that you would look at through your analytics, such as conversion of people arriving at our campaigns pages, taking action. So just to give you a few examples of this, you know, your sort of standard action might be for people to sign a petition to government. Mm-hmm. They ranging from that to, for example, booking a meeting with their member of parliament to go and talk about a particular issue and having that meeting. So that requires obviously a, you know, a higher level of commitment from a member of the public who's you know, engaged with us to campaign on a particular issue's behalf. But that can often be the most powerful sort of action that somebody can take, going to speak to their MP, or you know, in normal times, obviously going into their surgery and seeing mm-hmm. them. And it's where the Wildlife Trusts are really effective, because as I mentioned, we're so rooted in those local communities. So a number of individuals going and speaking to their MP, who will then be voting on a certain matter, has a really powerful effect in terms of our campaigning. And the real sort of role of the marketing team within all of that is to create those really smooth supporter journeys. So we work very hard on sort of smoothing out any kind of friction in that supporter journey and making things as easy as possible for people to get involved and take action.
With a commercial head on, I'd be very interested to know how you set a budget for that. Because commercially, you would say, well, I want so many pounds back. But clearly that's not how you're measuring your success. So how do you set budgets and targets?
Well, we do that too, actually. So the other area that we've not touched on yet is our fundraising. So
right.
How we're set up at the central charity, primarily we act as a consultancy service for individual wildlife trusts who are fundraising in their areas. So for example, they might be fundraising through appeals to buy a particular piece of land to rewild it. Legacy marketing is very important, so encouraging people to leave gifts in wills to wildlife trusts. And then membership. We're a membership-based set of organisations. Much of our unrestricted funding comes through monthly membership subscriptions. And the wildlife trusts have traditionally recruited very well at nature reserves and other public venues on a face-to-face model. About 75% of our memberships are recruited through face-to-face. But of course, increasingly, digital has become very important to us as well. And in recent years, the central charity has also taken on a role for fundraising for those individual wildlife trusts through recruiting memberships digitally. So we've developed some real expertise at the central charity in being able to run digital marketing campaigns at scale nationally in order to recruit new members for wildlife trusts. And we've had some really interesting results from that. So, for example, one of the things we found in the last year has been that we've been able to lower the age range of a wildlife trust member. So traditionally, the face-to-face recruitment has brought in people sort of over 35 years of age. What we're finding with the national digital campaigns is a much younger audience. So 25 to 34 year olds have been our biggest sort of joiners, followed by 16 to 24. So it's been a real sort of interesting shift actually in those people who are kind of turned on by the national messaging, probably a bit more sort of edgy stuff. We've talked about species loss. The last hedgehog was a particular creative that did very well. So we're sort of generating that impact, that income. And just to give you an idea of that, currently it's around £35 million pounds per annum that's generated through membership for the Wildlife Trust.
Wow, I hadn't realised it was that much.
Yeah,
right.
We have an ambition to grow our membership, to double it over the next 5 years. So we've set ourselves some really challenging goals, but we think we can do it. And if you look at the sort of history of membership marketing, you can see big leaps when we introduced a real focus on a new method of membership recruitment. So about 20 years ago, for example, door-to-door recruitment, you can see a huge phenomenal surge in growth in terms of membership. And it feels like this is the, you know, the age of digital where we're going to see that other huge leap in terms of membership recruitment. And all the early signs are really positive for that. As I mentioned earlier, people's concern for the environment has held up despite all of the other worries in the last 18 months. And it was quite an anxious time at the start of the first lockdown that we had in the UK for fundraisers, very worried about people cancelling those membership subscriptions, not being able to generate new funds from people who, you know, might be concerned about their own jobs, for example. But what we found is that actually members, we'd got very good retention rates, around 83% 5-year retention rates for memberships anyway. But that's gone up over the last year. So people have, you know, remained committed to charity giving, certainly within our sector, and have remained very loyal to those causes that are dear to them over the last year. So that's been really heartening to see. But it's also been testament to a range of kind of new retention mechanisms as well. So, it, you know, as we moved for our sort of business, I suppose, online, and our internal workings, we also upped our offering in terms of digital events for members of the public and for existing members as well, which certainly helped with retention. We also created a lot more digital content to keep people engaged during the first lockdown, for example. And we saw a 2,000% increase in views of our webcams. So we've got some really amazing webcams around the Wildlife Trust, you know, sort of filming anything from osprey nests to barn owl chicks and badger sets, and people were absolutely hooked on it. So even when you know, some people for whatever reason they might have been, you know, isolating, shielding, if they couldn't get out as regularly as they wanted to, they were still really consuming that nature content. And we worked very hard, certainly in the first few months, in sort of scrambling everything we had, you know, so we could keep people engaged in nature and in the Wildlife Trust cause.
Yes, I know. I spent many happy hours staring at osprey cam. Thursday,
oh, did you?
Yeah. Yes, loved it. Before I let you go, can we come back to what I said I was going to cover off, which is how people get into a career in marketing and in sustainability. So what is your own background? You said you came from marketing higher education.
Yeah, I spent most of my career working for a university, sort of 10 years in that, growing our undergraduate numbers, which was a target that we had, really sort of grew the student base for that university to the end that we were, for 5 years in a row, the fastest growing university in the UK in terms of undergraduate growth. But prior to that, I worked for a number of years for the NHS, heading up communications and engagement teams. And I cut my teeth, my first job after leaving university, was as a trainee reporter for a news agency working on national news stories for the national media. Within our patch, which was Staffordshire, which was a real sort of baptism of fire for me, as I'd just come fresh out of an English degree, and to retrain as a journalist required sort of unlearning all those beautiful, elegant, long sentences that I'd been used to writing my essays in, and to really, I can sort of still hear my first boss's words, muscular sentences, create sort of strong, muscular, snappy sentences that really captured people's attention in the first line of a story. And it's those sorts of, I guess, basic kind of writing skills, how to really engage your audience, know your audience, that really kind of set me off on a career around building that audience engagement for impact. And I ended up managing press teams, communication teams, and then joining the university, where I really then built my skills around the whole marketing piece. That kind of in a nutshell is my career path.
So what sort of skills are sustainability charities looking for? I mean, you said a muscular sentences and writing skills, but I'm sure it's much more than that.
Well, it certainly depends on the role that you're going for, of course. So at my level, certainly being able to manage and develop highly performing teams is absolutely essential. And a real focus on impact and how you measure impact and really develop a marketing culture across the whole organisation. And I think a lot of charities these days are looking for that. They're looking for somebody to build that culture, to build that focus on, you know, it's a kind of laser focus on what we need to achieve, and how we measure that and how we get there. In particular, an understanding of digital is absolutely crucial. So what you will see when you look around at the big UK charities is many of them have embarked on a digital transformation programme. Indeed, we're undergoing that ourselves at the Wildlife Trust. And obviously a key part of that is how we use digital to engage audiences, to create that excellent supporter experience that I was referring to earlier, to increase income and sustain that, and to really sort of drive that impact through our digital offer. Although, of course, our digital transformation encompasses more than the supporter experience or the customer experience. It covers all of our operations, but there is a big focus on marketing, of course. And so many charities will be looking for that expertise and real focus on digital.
Thirza, that was absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your expertise and the work of the Wildlife Trusts. That was Thirza McSherry, Director of Marketing and Communications at the Wildlife Trusts. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.